Our morning, today's daf in Kedushin is Lamed Zayin. Thank Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zech Nishmas, Liba Gabriela Bashmul. As we are winding down the first parak of Kedushin, and by winding down I mean that we are now on daf Lamed Zayin, which means that we've been here for more than a month already in a week. In the first parak of Kedushin, perhaps one of the longer parakim in all of Shas. I don't have a count in my head in terms of the other prakim, but I don't know many other prakim and shots that are 40 blot long. But anyway, what happened in the second half of this parak is that basically the Mishnah took a turn in terms of discussing generalities of obligations. Who is obligated in which mitzvahs? So the previous Mishnah back on Chav Tesem and Aleph discussed who is chayv in mitzvahs Esrei Shazman Grama, who is chayv in mitzvahs Esrei Shein Hazman Grama, who is chayv in the Yisurim. So this Mishnah now discusses mitzvahs that are Tluya Baris versus mitzvahs Shein Tluya Baris, mitzvahs which are contingent on the land of Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah begins. We start on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. Kol mitzvah shehi tluya baretz. Any mitzvah which is contingent to the land of Eretz Yisrael. Now, heges ben baretz ben bechutz aretz is going to be applicable whether you're living in Israel or whether you're living outside of Israel. Chutz with exception. Sorry, did I skip? Yes, I did. V'sheinu tluya baretz. However, if it's a mitzvah that's not connected to the land of Eretz Yisrael, no heges ben baretz ben bechutz aretz. So then it's going to apply both in Israel and outside of Israel as well. So, what we have right now is a basic rule that, and I'll say it simply, and although the Gemara for a moment is going to have a Havamina otherwise, but we all kind of know what the Pshat of the Mishnah already is, and that is basically what the Mishnah over here is making a distinction between agricultural law versus non-agricultural law. So if it's something Tluy Baretz, meaning it's agricultural, so then it only applies in Israel. If it's non-agricultural, so then it applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's the simple Pshat in the Mishnah. That's the Gemara is going to entertain another way to understand the Mishnah, but we all understand that's really what the Mishnah is driving at. And then the Mishnah is going to point to notable exceptions. Notable exceptions of things which, although can be viewed as agricultural, are going to be viewed outside of Eretz Yisrael. Number one, says the Mishnah, chutz mina arla. So the Isser of arla applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. So you grow a tree. I know a number of us have trees. We recently just planted our first fruit tree. We then wondered what took us so long to do so. But we planted our first fruit tree, and so the halach is, despite the fact that we don't live in Eretz Yisrael, so nevertheless, we have to abide by the laws of Arla, which means that 3 years after the planting of the tree, any fruit that grow from that tree during those first 3 years are going to be Aser. Aser ba'achila, Aser ba'anah, you're not allowed to get benefit from that tree. So this is the halach of Arla, although one could easily construct an argument that Arla is Tluya Baretz, meaning it certainly is an agricultural halacha, but nevertheless, that's halach l'mosh mi-Sinai. It's just simply although you won't see it written anywhere, but we have a tradition, going back to Moshe, that the halachas of Arla apply even outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. And the same thing is true regarding Kalayim, that the fact that you're not allowed to cross seeds on the ground, again, he could have viewed it as an agricultural halacha. You could have said that that is only specific to Eretz Yisrael, but again, we have a special halacha Moshe Messina that applies applies outside. Although Rashi, if you take a look at the Rashi over here, based on tomorrow's daf, there is going to be a distinction in terms of the degree of obligation between Arla and Kalayim outside of Eretz Yisrael. Take a look at the Rashi, top Rashi, on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Rashi writes, Shafapi, Shetulis Baretz, No Hekitzav Bechutzaretz, even though it is connected to the land, meaning these are agricultural laws, but nevertheless they're going to apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. Ha'arla halacha. So in terms of Arla, Rashi says it's halacha, meaning it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, as opposed to Kalayim Divrei Sofrim. So that means that it's Midrabanan. Okay, so that's there is levels in terms of degree of obligation, but still they both are applicable outside of Eretz Yisrael. And then just finishing off the Mishnah, Rav Lozer Amar Afachadosh, Rav Lozer says even Chadash. Now the Gemara itself is going to be unclear whether when he says the words even Chadash, is he trying to be Machmir, is he trying to be Mekel? But before we explain which way he's going in terms of Chumrah versus Kula, so first let's talk about what he's talking about, and then later when we get to the Gemara, we're going to address whether or not he's including or excluding Chadash. First of all, what is Chadash? So we're supposed to know, we should know, that Chadash is any of the new grains. right? Chadash Asr Min HaTorah, which took that expression, which is an expression from the Mishnah, that expression took on new meaning two to three hundred years ago in Europe when the conservative movement, the reform movement, started moving into Europe. So then that expression took on new meaning. But classically, what the Mishnah means is that Chadash is Asr Min HaTorah, which simply means that any new grains that grow are going to be prohibited, meaning that you have grains that grow in your field. Let's keep it nice and simple. Let's say you're growing wheat in your backyard. I mean, it could be you and I, as we're going to see later on, it applies even in Chutz La'aretz. So you and I are growing wheat in our backyard. So we harvest the wheat. So typically, the wheat was a winter harvest. So so we would harvest the wheat, and then once it's harvested, truth of the matter is, even before it's harvested, it has it. It's called chadash. It's new. It's brand new. And not until it gets quote unquote old are you and I allowed to eat it. Okay, so it's fascinating. Every grain of wheat starts off as being asr, and only becomes permitted when it gets old. The obvious question you need to ask is, when does it get old? What's the date on the calendar where the wheat becomes old? And the answer is, we're approaching it. It's going to be a week from now, the second day of Pesach, where we brought the carbon omer. So this year, first day of Pesach falls on a Shabbos. Second day of Pesach would fall on a Sunday. Now here in Chutz La'aretz, we're obviously going to be observing Yom Tov Sheni, Shogalios. But Bizman Beis HaMikdash. So on the second day of Pesach, which was the first day of Chol HaMoed, so we'd be bringing the carbon omer. And the bringing of that carbon omer is a matir. It permits. What does it permit? All the grain that grew over the course of this previous season now becomes mutter. In other words, it takes the grain and turns it from chadash to yashan. And so now that the grain has now become quote unquote old, halachically old, so now it's permitted. Now it's totally permissible. So now with all that stated, so essentially what Rav Elazar is saying is that this iser of chadash, well, again, not perfectly clear whether he's coming to be machmer, he's coming to be mako, but for sure here's what we know. In the Mishnah, there is an opinion that says that Chadash applies only in Eretz Yisrael. And in the Mishnah, there's an opinion that says that Chadash applies even outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. Okay, and what we're going to discuss later on is that the Isser of Chadash, we'll see the Gemara later on, it applies outside of Eretz Yisrael as well.
We have more than one growing season.
Correct. It becomes much more complicated because we have winter harvest, and we have also I know a little bit about this, but yes, I know what you're talking about. I do understand. The couple things which the most obvious thing which I'm just going to address quickly. It's not it's related to the daf in that. After having learned the daf today, you're wondering why, you know, some people hold of yashan and some people don't hold of yashan. So first of all, just to clarify, we all hold of yashan. Meaning there's not, you can't, the shita is not, listen, I know it's a mitzvah in the Torah, I know it's an mitzvah in the Torah, I just simply don't hold of it. That's just not it's not a very informed, an informed opinion. Everyone holds of yashan. It's just a question of who's careful about it and who's not careful about it. So most of us Jews here in America are not careful about it. Again, I don't know the statistics, I don't know the, I haven't done a sociology study on who's careful and who's not, but I would say, just guesstimating, that most Americans are not careful about Yashin, and a good percentage of Jews in America are more concerned and more careful about Yashin. You go to certain bakeries, and you'll see that some bakeries, mm-hmm. you know, the quote-unquote, the firmer bakeries, so they're going to advertise, you know, Yashin. We only sell Yashin. So, and it's not like the less firmer bakeries are saying, and we serve Chadash, and we make sure to serve Chadash, and don't worry, it's going to be Asr Min HaTorah. Again, it doesn't work that way. It just simply means that the bakeries who are professing to be selling Yashin just simply means they're much more careful about it. They're actually looking at the flour that comes into their bakery, and they know. There's a list that goes out. People know. People who are careful about it know that that this flour comes from the previous season, meaning that it grew and harvested before the previous, before the previous Pesach. So that is So we all have to subscribe to this idea. So why do most Americans are just simply not careful about it? So this question really didn't start in America. This question started in Europe, meaning the Ashkenazi Jewry in Europe already were not as careful by Yashan as our contemporaries living in the Sephardic communities. So how did this come about in the Ashkenazi communities? So that is a discussion in of itself. Meaning that question of why are we less careful about Yashan over other Yisurim? So that question was addressed. That question can and is its own separate year, but that's something to be aware of. Just to name drop a little bit, the Bach of Yol Sirks in Poland. So he was the one who first formally addressed the issue of why it is us Ashkenazim are not as careful as of Yashan as we should be. So and then subsequent to him, other Ashkenazim also formulated reasons why we're not as careful. Anyway. Okay, I don't want to get involved in it, but it's certainly something worth discussing. In the Mishnah, the one thing, however, which certainly needs an answer is, you know, the Mishnah talks about agricultural law versus non-agricultural law. And the Mishnah says that when it comes to agricultural law, it applies in Eretz Yisrael, with a couple notable exceptions, and the Mishnah goes over two, possibly three notable exceptions. There is another agricultural law which applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael that the Mishnah doesn't make any mention of whatsoever. And it's another notable omission from the Mishnah, and that is the mitzvah of challah, meaning when we make dough, so we take a portion of the dough. Now, nowadays, we don't give it to the kohen for various reasons. Question of pedigree, question of tuma tahara. Kohen can't eat the challah that's given to him. Okay, plenty of reasons why we don't give it to the kohen, but we still take off challah, and we live outside of Eretz Yisrael, and everyone takes off challah. So that's so. How come it's not mentioned in the Mishnah? If you take a look at Tosfos on the back on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, so Tosfos quotes a Yerushalmi. The long Tosfos writes, "Kol mitzvah satui baretz chutz min ha'ar levakalaim b'Yerushalmi parach ha'mai lo tani l'chala." So how come chala is not mentioned in the Mishnah? It's a notable omission. So Mishani, so Lefishena Beis, so Shalvi Kochavim. So Velo Mairi Masis and Alba Divran Nohagim Beisol Uve Ovde Kochavim. So one answer is that, well, the Mishnah over here was only talking about those things which would be obligated when in the hands of a Jew. But if it applies to things which are Jewish and not Jewish, our Mishnah is just simply not addressing. V'kasha amaylo parach nami hausam amaylo tani truma meiser k'deparech mechala ve'en lama lafi she'en amela medirabanan da'achala nami eina b'chus arz ela medirabanan v'afilo hachi bay amaylo tani chala v'lo mashan l'shifim lafi she'hi medirabanan. Okay. Okay. Here we go. That's the line I'd like to see. Forgive me. I glossed over that last couple of lines in Tosfos. V'yishlamar d'achi. So fine. V'hainu taima de'gazra l'chal b'kol makom tfei mitruma meiser. Okay. Here we go. So why is it that challah extends even outside of Eretz Yisrael? Meaning, okay. In other words, the Mishnah didn't write it for whatever reason. The Mishnah didn't write it. But let's ask a simple question. We take off challah, and it's an agricultural halacha. Clearly. And so why is it that challah even applies outside of Eretz Yisrael? So Tosfos over here quotes, he writes, V'hainu taima de'gazra l'challah b'chol makom tfei mitruma meiser, and the fact that the Chachamim instituted challah, and you know the Chachamim didn't institute trumas meisros, right? When we buy produce here in this country, in chutz la'aretz, so we don't take off trumas meisros, and we don't even have a rabbinic requirement to do so. And meanwhile, we all take off challah. Lefisha challah doma yoseh l'chovas aguf. There we go. A line I wanted to glean off of Tosfos, because Tosfos says that challah is more comparable to what's called the chovas aguf. Sharechiv ba ayide gilgal isa sheha adam oseh. It's more in the residential domain than it is in the field and in the farms. Meaning, it's very interesting. We're basically creating a distinction. Again, all this is rabbinic because Minatora, there's no obligation Minatora outside of Eretz Yisrael. But we're basically creating a distinction between agricultural law and once it already has now made it into the home. once it's made it into the home, and the mitzvah of challah is once it makes it into your home, so then it's less agricultural. Meaning, think about just our society. In our society, we are not an agricultural society. Most of us, you know, maybe at one point in time we visited a farm, but we're not an agricultural society. And meanwhile, when does the mitzvah of challah begin? In our houses, even though we're not an agricultural society. Meaning what happens is that only when the flour and the water are combined together and you're making the dough, then and only then do you have a chiyuv of challah. So since the obligation starts, yes, it's an agricultural law, but since the obligation starts in your home, so therefore, says Tosfos, it's more comparable to a chovas aguf. Tosfos is not saying it is a chovas aguf, it's not a chovas aguf, it's still connected to the land, but because the obligation happens in our home, so it's more comparable to a chovas aguf. And that's why the mitzvah of challah extends well beyond, even nowadays, even in chutz arts as well. Okay, so What have we seen so far? A Mishnah, a distinction between mitzvahs at tuluy baris versus mitzvahs chana tuluy baris. The notable exceptions are len klaim, the omission in the Mishnah of challah. We saw Tosfos give an explanation of why it was omitted, why challah was extended even outside of Eretz Yisrael. And finally, the last opinion of Rav Elazar, which we're not sure at this point in time, whether he's coming to be machmer or he's coming to be mekel regarding the Isser of Chadash. Okay, with all that stated, let's start with the Gemara. We're on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. We're at the top of the Amud. My Tluya, my Shein Tluya. Simple question: what is the definition of Tluya and Ein Tluya? So I already told you the answer, but the Gemara is going to entertain a Havamina. Elam Tluya Dichsev Bebia, Vishein Tluya Dichsev Bebia. Well, maybe it's textual. Maybe it's just a function of when the Torah introduces the mitzvah with the word bia, right? Example: Ki Savo Al Aretz, Ki Yiviyacha. Right, Rashi gives those examples. So in other words, a number of mitzvahs are introduced with the word bia when we go into Eretz Yisrael. And so maybe the only distinction to be made between tluya is that in a tluya is just simply open up a chumash and just mark off every time the parsha opens up with the words ki viacha or ki savo. So the Gemara says, "Very tefillin upetucham mor dichsiv ben bia v'nagim bei marz ben b'chutzars." But the Gemara says, "But that's just simply not true." Meaning tefillin, we know, applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. And the mitzvah of Petra Chamor, which I've never done in my lifetime, raise your hand if you've done the mitzvah of Petra Chamor, but the redemption of the sheep with the donkey, redemption of the firstborn donkey with a sheep, okay, other way around. So anyway, so those apply in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, and yet the Torah opens up that parsha with the words Ki Viecha. Now, fascinating. How do I know that tefillin applies outside of Eretz Yisrael? Meaning, the Gemara is asking a question. The Gemara is saying, "Well, you know, it's not true because tefillin, which opens up with the words Ki Viecha, also is done in and outside of Eretz Yisrael." Maybe the assumption is a false assumption. Maybe tefillin only applies in Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi gives the answer that I would have given, but you know, I'll just read Rashi. Rashi says, "Bein ba'aretz, bein b'chutzaretz." So Rashi says, "Tefillin ashkecham b'kamaduchtin b'rabbanan amarai de'bavel de'manchi tefillin." So Rashi says, just as an argument that we know tefillin applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, so Rashi here uses an empirical argument. Well, they do it. Meaning, you're living in Bavel, you're looking around, right? The Amoraim are wearing tefillin. They know what they're doing. So it's an interesting argument by Rashi, how we know it applies, whether you're in or outside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, but it's not a textual argument. It's not a source. It's not a drasha. It's just look around. Everyone's wearing tefillin. It must apply in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. So Am Rav Yehuda Achi Kamas Rav Yehuda says fine. Okay, so that's not going to be the pshat in the Mishnah. It's not a question. It's not a textual question of when the Torah opens up with the words ki v'yacha, but rather kol mitzvah shihi chovas aguf no heges bein ba'aretz bein b'chutz aretz chovas karka eino no heges ela ba'aretz. Fine, the Gemara says exactly what we said back in the Mishnah, and that is that really the line to draw is agricultural. If it's something that comes off the ground, it's tuluya ba'aretz. It's connected to the land. Here we mean it in the most literal way possible. literally, it's a tree. It's a plant. It's a vegetable. It's connected to the ground. It's coming off the ground. However, if it's chovas aguf, it's something that you and I are obligated to do on our bodies, so then it's eino noheges baaretz, and it's therefore applicable both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Mina hanimila. So the Gemara now wants to know, what is the source? How do we know that such a distinction exists, that if it's an agricultural law, it's limited to Eretz Yisrael, and if it's non-agricultural law, it applies all over the world? Ditan Rabbanan, the Gemara here is going to quote a pasuk. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to go through this pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, and basically we're going to chop it up piecemeal, and we're going to darshan every phrase in the pasuk. So, and this is part of the Sifrei. We're a week from now, or less than a week from now, Friday night, when we sit down the Seder, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to do with the four psukim in Parshas Kisavo, meaning when we sit down, Rami Alvidavi, so we're quoting four psukim from the beginning of Parshas Kisavo, and basically what the Medrash does, which we're going to be reading together, is it takes a word, then gives an interpretation, and it does that again and again. So here also, the Sifri is doing the same thing, but a little bit earlier in Devarim, this is Parshas Re'eh. So Eila Chukim, Eila Medrashos. So the Chukim is a reference to the Medrash. And Vamishpatim Eila Adinim. These are monetary laws. Asher Tishmurun Zu Mishnah. The Tishmurun is a reference to Mishnah. Lazo Zu Maisa. The Asiya is a reference to the actions. Kind of self-evident. Ba'aretz yachol kol ha-mitzvos kulan lo yeh noragas ala ba'aretz. Here the Sifri has a havamina. I might have thought that all the mitzvos of the Torah are applicable only in Eretz Yisrael. Tamalam kol yamim asher atem chayim al ha'adama. So all the days that you're living on the earth, as long as you're somewhere on this earth, so the mitzvos are going to be applicable. And then the Sifri says, now I might have thought that all the mitzvos should apply in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Tamalamar ba'aretz. Then the Torah goes on to say ba'aretz. Echad she'acher shariba kasev v'miyed say olamad. So now, are you confused? You should be, because on one hand, first the Sifri generated that we are obligated in mitzvos all over the world. Then the Sifri says it's limited only to Eretz Yisrael. So, which one is it? It's either one or the other. Or, as we're going to see in just a moment, we're going to strike a balance. Say ulamad. So, again, it's Sifri. So, we're just so used to this kind of terminology because, you know, we're going to see the similar terminology in the Haggadah. Say ulamad mi masham or binyan. Aveta avdunas kolam akamas asher avdu sham hagoyim. So, the Torah says that you have to destroy the avodah zara. Ma avodas kochavim yucheresh uchavas aguf v'no agiz mein ba'aretz mein b'chol tzaretz. Now, when it comes to avodah zara, so it is a chavas aguf. It is not agriculturally based, and it applies in and outside of Eretz. So, af kol she chavas aguf, no agus bein baretz bein b'chol tzaretz. So, anything which is non-agriculturally based is going to apply in and out of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, and brings us now to the middle of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, chutz min ha'arla ve'aklaim. Okay, notable exceptions. In our Mishnah, what do we learn together? Arla applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, as we learned the Rashi back in the Mishnah. That is Halacha Moshe Mesinai. Kalayim, you're not allowed to plant different seeds together one with another. You're not allowed to create a cross between seeds. So that too applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. And that is, as we learned in Rashi, a din d'rabbanan that's extended outside of Eretz Yisrael. And then Rabbi Elazar says, just two words in the Mishnah, Af HaChadosh. Even the Isser Chadosh also what? Also does apply, also doesn't apply. So, the Gemara says that's exactly what we're going to ask. Ibailu, Revelazel, Lekula Palig, or Lechomer Palig. So we know he's arguing, but what is he arguing with? Is he arguing with the Tanakhama, or is he arguing is he arguing with the ruler, or is he arguing with the exception? That's essentially what the Gemara's question is. So, lechomer palik. I'm sorry, lekula palik or lechomer palik. Lechomer palik. So, on one hand, you could say he's arguing lechomer. V'achi kamer tanakama. Meaning, here's how you're going to read the tanakama. Chutz mina arla mina klayim. Dehilchza gemirla. Afagav deigla meimer chavas karkahi. Avachadash ba'aretz in bechutz la'aretz lo. Now, the tanakama's position is like this. Arla and Kalayim apply in and out of Eretz Yisrael. Even though it's agricultural, it applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. And then, the implicit statement of the Tanna Kamma is, but by Chadash, it only applies in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael. My Taima, Moshav la'achar Yerusha v'yeshiva mashma. Because when the Torah says Moshav, Moshav means once we are settled. Once we're settled, then and only then, the mitzvah of Chadash is going to kick in. Which means then that once we're settled, meaning once we have a settlement in Eretz Yisrael, so then and only then is Chadash going to be applicable. That's the Tanna Kamma's viewpoint. Now again, all this was not articulated, but that's exactly how what the Gemara is doing right now. There is an implicit statement of the Tanna Kamma, which is Chadash is limited only to Eretz Yisrael. And on this implicit statement, along comes Rav Elazar and says, no, I disagree. Chadash applies even in and out outside of Eretz Yisrael. Because when it says Moshev, it just simply means anywhere where you live. There is going to be where the mitzvah, or in this case, the Isser of Chadash is going to apply. That's one possibility of how to read Rav Elazar. Oh, Dilma, the Gemara says, I'll go over another possibility. Lekula palig. Really, Rav Elazar is telling us a kula. V'hachi kama. And this is going to be the structure of the Mishnah, and this is how we're going to understand the Mishnah. Tanakama, v'hachi kama, tanakama. Chutz menar lo v'klaim deo chesagimir lo v'kol shekin chadash demoshav. Kol makam shetem yoshvim, mashma. So, the Tanakama statement is that the notable exceptions are Arla and Klein, and it goes without saying, in fact, it so goes without saying, the Tanna Kamma didn't say it, and it goes without saying that of course Chadash applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, because Chadash, the Torah says the word Moshav, and Moshav implies anywhere where you are, you have to abide by the Isser of Chadash. So that's the Tanna Kamma's viewpoint. Now again, now there is also in this second viewpoint, a second implicit statement of the Tanna Kamma, but the implicit statement is, of course Chadash applies. Rav Lazal Amemer, Chadash in Anoig Ela Ba'aretz, Demoshav La'achay Yerusha V'yishiva Mashma. So, and then Rav Lazal is coming along and rejecting the implicit statement. But here rejection of the implicit statement means I'm rejecting the inclusion of Chadash. What Rav Lazal is saying is that Chadash should be excluded. Just like, I was right the first time. It should be excluded. So the Moshav La'achay Yerushav Yeshiva Mashma. Because Rav Elazar's understanding is, yes, the Torah says the word Moshav as it relates to the Isser of Chadash, but Moshav means settlement of Eretz Yisrael. Once we are settled in Eretz Yisrael, then and only then are we going to have to abide by the Isser of Chadash, which means that it is connected and contingent to Eretz Yisrael. Akamaisa. And when he says af, it was going back not on the exception, but rather on the rule. The rule is agricultural law applies only in Eretz Yisrael. And when Rav Elazar says the word af, he's saying even, not the exceptions, meaning let's attach Chadash back to the rule, it's an agricultural law, and therefore it only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so it's really a simple question. It's the ambiguity that's found within Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar says af chadash. So again, let's just phrase it the way we put it at the beginning of this shir. Is the af chadash going on the rule, or is the af chadash going on the exception? So that's the Gemara's question right now. And the Gemara says, and I could easily read it either way into the Mishnah. And so now that I could read it either way in the Mishnah, so now let's see what did Rav Elazar mean when he says af chadash. Tashma, the Amar Abaye Mantana de Palagalad de Rav Elazar, Rabbi Shmalhi. So Abaye identifies, I know who argues with Rabbi Elazar of our Mishnah, and that would be Rabbi Shmal. And now what we're going to do is we're going to learn a Braisa together. And the Braisa is going to teach us what the definition of Moshav is, according to Rabbi Shmal. And Abaye is telling us that Rabbi Elazar is going to disagree. So once we have established what Rabbi Shmal is going to say, so we know that Rabbi Elazar is the antithesis of that point. And so we'll know, at least according to Abaye, how he understands Rabbi Elazar. Okay, Tanya. So first thing, now that we have the game plan ahead of us, so now, well, let's go and see what Rabbi Shmuel is actually going to teach us. Tanya, lamdecha shekol makom shenemar b'moshav, eino ela l'achar Yerusha v'yeshiva divrei Rabbi Shmuel. The Torah says the word moshav. Moshav means not anywhere you're living. Moshav means settlement of Eretz Yisrael. Once you are settled, so then it's going to be applicable. What are we talking about over here? Meaning a little context. So let's see. Rashi here is going to provide the context. Lalam dechashik al makom. Rashi is a little bit right, a little bit below where we are in the Gemara. Rashi is just about five lines before the lines become wider. Rashi writes, "Lam dechashik al makom v'chulei ga beparsha nesachim kai beparsha shlach lecha." So Rashi first of all tells us where to look in the Chumash. Go to Parsha Shlach. Okay, in the middle of Bamidbar. And there, the Torah, after the Meraglim, so the Torah introduces us to the Parsha of Nesachim. The Parsha of Nesachim is telling us that with every carbon, most every carbon, some carbonists don't have it, but with most every carbon, you have what's called Nesachim. Okay, translated in English as libations. I still don't know what the word libation means, so it doesn't matter. It just simply means that there is going to be an accompaniment with the carbon of wine and oil and flour. That comes together with every carbon. The Sachem. So, Rashi continues to write, Dichsiv kisavo ela aretz moshvo sechem. And there, in the opening of the Parsha of Nesachim, the Torah opens up by saying, when you go into the land of Eretz Yisrael, moshvo sechem. Now, Rashi writes, Vasisa Mishel, I'm sorry, Vasisa Mishel Hashem, V'gomer. V'yalef Rabbi Shema b'shchitas kachem. Now, Rashi says, now what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to open up the Gemara in Zvachim, and there, Mikra de lo ba kasav ela lahatinam nesachem labamos sibor volo labamos yachid. And what the Torah is telling us is the following. Quick history lesson. We went into Eretz Yisrael. We didn't set up shop right away. In fact, it took 14 years to divide and conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael. Now, during those 14 years of dividing and conquering the land, so we did not have a permanent base of Mikdash. We didn't have a Mishkan. In other words, nothing was set up, and it was not going to be set up until year 15 after we get into Eretz Yisrael. So, in year 15, then we set up a Mishkan in a place called Shiloh, and the Mishkan was there in Shiloh for the next 369 years. Then Shiloh was destroyed, and then it took a little bit of time, about a half a century, before the Beit HaMikdash was built. Okay, that's your very short history lesson for this morning. For those 14 years, after entering into Eretz Yisrael, the time it took to divide and conquer the land, so, what do we do in terms of karbanos? So there was a heter bamos. We can go to our backyard, build a little altar in our backyard, and offer carbon in our backyard. So now, question. When I offer carbon in my backyard, do I present with my carbon nesachim? Yes or no? That's what Rabbi Shmuel is addressing. And now let's go back to Rashi. Let's see the Rashi inside. So Rashi writes, the deloba kasav ela latinam nesachim labamot sibur. Correct. The Torah is only telling us that we need to bring Nesachim only after we set up the Bamat Sibur, meaning, and now we could say this now with a historical, with the historical retrospect, meaning Shiloh. V'lola Bamat Yachid, v'nafkele medichsiv, asher anino sein lechem, b'bama noages l'kuchem. We're looking at a public Bama, a public Mizbeach. Which is Shiloh. Hakaz medaber helkach akarcha chai moshe vosechem lav kol makom she'atem yoshvim mashma de'ein b'matzibur ela b'makom echad. Now the word moshev over there cannot be a reference to wherever you are because it's simply not true. We know there's only one public bama. Again, 14 years after we went in, set up in Shiloh, but that's only one place. Elahim Moshev Dichziv Asak Kralashmina Da'apa Bamas Gilgal Shaisha Mizbech and Echoshes Kol Yudal Shama Shekiv Shevechilko Vehi Bamas Sibur Lonis Chavim Nesachim. And it's coming to teach us that even though during those 14 years there was a makeshift Bama that was set up, and it was set up in the place of Gilgal, but that wasn't. But that was only temporary. And what the Torah is coming to teach us is that we have no obligation during those 14 years, even though we're going to bring our karbanos to Gilgal, our public karbanos to Gilgal, but we have no obligation to bring Nesachim. Ava mishabal l'shiloh, d'hainu l'acha yirusha v'yeshiva. But after going to Shiloh, after 14 years of of conquering and dividing, then and only then are we obligated to bring Nesachim in conjunction with our Karbanos. V'shuv lo pasko Nesachim mibam utzibur. So, and at that, from that point going forward, there's an obligation to bring Nesachim going forward. And Rashi points out, v'afilo mishachar v'shila v'haisa bam utzibur, v'no v'givon. Now, yes, it's true, says Rashi, that there was a little period in history where Shila was destroyed and the Beis HaMikdash was not going to be built for about a half a century later. But still, Nesachim are required. V'hainu dekar melam ducha shekalmakim v'chulei. Klamer, mi depar shlecha kra bama hanoheges bekulchem, shma mina, Moshev dechsiv b'nesachim, lav kalmakim mashma. But Rashi says, but here's the point. The point is that once you see Moshev in the context of Nesachim, Moshev does not mean wherever you live. Moshev is telling us that you will hit a historical juncture where then and only then it's obligated. But it's not talking about geographic location. It's simply talking about you need to get to a historical landmark. What landmark do you need to get to? Once we are settled in Eretz Yisrael, then and only then are we obligated to bring Nesachim. So, fine. That is according to Rabbi Yishmael. Now let's go back upstairs. Let's see the Gemara. So, Rabbi Yishmael, he did tell you, Lamdecha Shekomakim Shanem Barba Moshev, Eino Ela La'acha Yerushav Yeshiva Div Rabbi Yishmael. Amala Rabbi Akiva, to which Rabbi Akiva turns to Rabbi Yishmael and says, really? Moshev is not talking about geographic location wherever you are. We know that when it comes to Shabbos, the Torah says, Lo Sivaru Eish. Wherever you are, you're not allowed to light a fire. Now, there the word Moshav, what do you think Moshav means over there? You think it means only after we sell Eretz Yisrael, then and only then we have to keep Shabbos? Obviously not. When it comes to Shabbos, Shabbos is applicable everywhere. Doesn't matter where the geography is. So, Rabbi Kiva says to Rabbi Shmuel, what are you going to do with that? Without Moshavos in the context of Shabbos, Amalei Shabbos Kavachomer Asya Ma Mitzvahs Kalos Nagas Main Bartz Main Bechotzarts Shabbos Chamir Lo Kol Shekain. So to that, Rabbi Shmuel says, "What do you mean? That for Shabbos, I have a very simple logical argument. If the quote unquote lighter mitzvahs apply both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, Shabbos, which is a much more severe mitzvah, severity defined by the punishment of skila, severity defined by the fact that if you are a Mechal Shabbos Befar Heska, you have the status of a Mumar. So Shabbos, which is more severe, Lokol Shekain, so fine. That is the dialogue between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. What do we want to glean from this entire dialogue? That according to Rabbi Shmuel, the word Moshav does not mean wherever you are. The word Moshav simply means once we're settled in Eretz Yisrael, then and only then do we have an application of a law. In this particular case that the Gemara just gave us, the law of Nesachim. But what we want to glean from all this is that according to Rabbi Shmuel, the word Moshav does not mean wherever you live. Now, with all that stated, Mida Amar Abaye, the Gemara now finally finishes its point. Mantana de Palgalad de Rav Lazar Rabbi Shmuel. So now we have Abaye pitting Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah against Rabbi Shmuel. Shmamina, Rabbi Lazar Lichomer Palig, Shmamina. So now we know that at least according to Abaye, we have Rabbi Elazar disagreeing with Rabbi Shmuel, meaning that according to Rabbi Eliezer, at least Abaye's understanding of it, the word Moshav means wherever you geographically are. That's the word Moshav. And that means now that the Isser Chodesh, where the Torah uses the word Moshav, is applicable wherever you are, according to Rabbi Lazar. So we now see that how Abaye understood Rabbi Lazar, he is coming to be Machmir. Shma mina. Michti Rabbi Shmuel, Echa Kai Nesachim. So now the Gemara says, wait one second. Let's go back now to Abaye's point, drawn from Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that when it comes to Nesachim, we have this idea that Nesachim only apply once we settled in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And that he learned from the word Moshav. The Gemara says, wait one second. Ben Nesachim, top of Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, Bia Moshav Ksiv Bohu. It's a little bit unfair to draw such a large conclusion from Nesachim, because in Nesachim we have two key words. One, Kisavo, when you go into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And two, Moshav. So, how can we learn from Nesachim when basically what Rabbi Shmuel is trying to teach us is that when you see the word Moshav, it doesn't mean geography, it means settling Eretz Yisrael. But don't learn it from Nesachim, because by Nesachim you have two keywords over there, Bi and Moshav. So Hachi Kamara, Lama Shekol Malkam Shenemra Bi and Moshav, Eino Ela La'acha Yerushav Yeshiva, Dev Rabbi Shmuel. So the Gemara says, fine, all we're doing is just tweaking our understanding of Rabbi Shmuel. That's actually Rabbi Shmuel's point. That when it says Bia and Moshav, so then it means upon the settlement of Eretz Yisrael. He achi amar lo Rabbi Kiva, Arei Shabbos Shenemra Bo Moshavos, V'am Le Shabbos Kavachomehi, Neim Ala Ana Bia Moshav Kamina. So the Gemara says, if we're right, then we don't understand the dialogue between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva. Because what was Rabbi Kiva's response to Rabbi Shmuel? Hey, what about Shabbos? Shabbos, the Torah uses the word Moshav, Moshavoseichem. And Shabbos, we know, geographically applies everywhere. Now, if we have now our tweaked understanding of Rabbi Shmuel has a very simple response to Rabbi Kiva. Don't introduce Shabbos into the discussion. I'm only talking about the mitzvahs in the Torah, where there are two keywords, Bia and Moshav. You're talking just about Shabbos. Shabbos only says Moshav. Why didn't Rabbi Shmuel use that as a response to Rabbi Kiva if our new understanding of Rabbi Shmuel is correct? So the Gemara says, Chadava Od Kamar. So the Gemara says, once again, that's an implicit answer in the Braisa. The Braisa didn't say it. Didn't need to say it, I guess. But that was an implicit answer. And then on top of that, also, Rabbi Shmuel wanted to give another point to Rabbi Kiva as well. Chada, the Anabiyah Moshav Kamina, meaning first the answer of Rabbi Shmuel saying to Rabbi Kiva, I'm talking about Bia and Moshav. So already Shabbos doesn't even fit into this discussion, because by Shabbos only the Torah only says the word Moshav. And two is that the Ode Kamar Hari Shabbos and Emar Moshavos Shabbos Kavachomer he. So and then to your second point of wait one second, Shabbos the Torah says the word Moshavos and it should only apply in Eretz Yisrael. Shabbos we have a Kavachomer. If other Chovas Aguf apply in and outside of Eretz Yisrael, Shabbos which is more Chamor of course applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. B'makim Miflegi. The Gemara wants to know now. We have a machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva. And the machlokas is basically, when we enter into Eretz Yisrael, do we offer Nesachim with our Kabbanos, yes or no? Rabbi Shmuel says, no. Rabbi Kiva says, yes. And the Gemara wants to know, what's really at the core of this machlokas over here? B'kirvu Nesachim b'midbar kemiflegi. So the Gemara says, really, I mentioned this just the other day. In order to understand any type of debate, you have to know what your assumption is going into the debate. Meaning, what was the default setting? And so, basically now, when the pasuk is telling us a halacha, what is it doing to the assumption, to the basic default setting? Rabbi Shmuel, Savar lo kivu nesachim b'midbar. So Rabbi Shmuel starts off with the assumption of, they did not offer nesachim in the midbar. So now when the Torah is introducing us to Nesachim Parsha Shlach, so essentially what the Torah is saying is, hey, here's something you've never done, and only when you go into Eretz Yisrael and settle Eretz Yisrael, then and only then you have to bring Nesachim. That's how Rabbi Shmuel understands it. Now Rashi notes over here that the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Shmuel, we didn't offer Nesachim in the desert. True or not true? It's a funny question. Either Rabbi Shmuel just said we don't, so he obviously believes that it never happened. Rashi notes, however, if you open up Chumash, and we're going back a couple of parshios in about 2 months ago, so we learned in Parshas Tetzave by the Miluim, by the inauguration, they did offer Nesachim. And so Rashi writes over here, Rabbi Shmuel Savala Kivra Nesachim Bemidbar, Ve'af Agav Dixiv Bemiluim. So when we had the inauguration of the Mishkan, so the Torah does say, V'zeasher ta'asela mizbeach, uksiv bei, Nesachim bolas atamid. So it did say that we offered Nesachim by the Karban Tamid. So now, basically, what Rashi's asking is, what's Rabbi Shmuel going to do with that? Meaning the Torah does describe Nesachim being offered in the desert. So Rashi says, Bekarban Sibur, Hu dahavu, aval hayichidim lo yischayvim nesachim ela mibias haaretz ve'elech la'achir Yerusha v'yeshiva. Very good. So Rashi says that this was, yes, there were nesachim in the midbar, but only specific to public karbanos. However, the private karbanos, so what Rabbi Shmuel would tell you, what he is telling us, is that the private karbanos did not have nesachim, and did not have nesachim until we entered into Eretz Yisrael, and then the word Moshav is coming to teach us. It's not day one, it's only after it's settled, which is going to be only after 14 years. The Rabbi Kiva back to the Gemara. Rabbi Kiva suffered Kiva Nesachim in Midbar. According to Rabbi Kiva, they did offer Nesachim in the desert. Amar Abaye, sorry, period. And that means that everybody offered Nesachim. And then when we go into Eretz Yisrael, so now what? Meaning the default setting, the presumed state according to Rabbi Kiva is that we did offer Nesachim. So that I don't need a special requirement when we go into Eretz Yisrael that we're going to have to bring this in the Nesachim. So the only thing that's coming to tell me now is that when I set up my Bama Zechid, my individual Bama, so then there would be a special heter to allow the bringing of Nesachim. That would be according to Rabbi Kiva. Okay. Ham Amar Abaye Haitan Debe Ravishma Mapik Meirich Tan Debe Ravishma. Abaye now notes that there are inconsistencies regarding Tan Debe Ravishma. Meaning, I'm going to show you another Tan Debe Ravishma that is slightly inconsistent than the one we just learned. Tan Debe Ravishma, Hovenem Rabbi Betora, Stamu Parlacha Akasa Be'echad Mehem. It says Bia in the Torah multiple times. Ki Yaviecha, Ki Savou, right? Again, I don't have a count. I don't know how many times it says in the Torah in terms of an introduction, but it says it multiple times. Now, Upralacha Kasu Be'echa Mehem La'acher Yerusha V'Yeshiva. Now, on one of the occasions, it actually identifies only after you settle the land. Where, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, Gabi Melech Ksiv. Rashi writes that this is in reference to a king. The Torah says, Kisavo La'aretz V'Rishta V'Shafta Ba, and you inherit it and you settle it. The Amarta Asima Alai Melech, then and only then does the mitzvah of having a king kick in. So there the Torah specifies that that's after settlement. Av Kol La'acha Yerusha V'Yeshiva. So this Tana Debe Rav Yishmael teaches us that now what the Torah has done is, since it told us in one place that Kisavo means not upon entrance but upon entrance, conquering and settling, so that means that every time the Torah says Kisavo, it's upon entering, settling, I'm sorry, entering, conquering, and settling. Now, that is this Tana Debe Rav Yishmael. Basically, it's the rule of Binyanav. It's a precedent. The Torah sets forth a precedent. Now, clearly, this Tana Debe Rav Yishmael is arguing with the previous Tana Debe Rav Yishmael. Because the previous Tana Debe Rav Yishmael says, when do I have this idea that entering means entering, conquering, and settling? Only when I have the double language of Bia plus Moshav. Here in this Braisa, it's every time the Torah says the word Kisavo. So now Abaye just simply says, look, I'm not going to try to answer up these two Tana Debe Rav Yishmaels. They're just simply inconsistent with one another. I'm not making a small thing about it, but Abaye said it. Abaye says they're just simply incompatible with one another. And now what the Gemara is going to try to do is explain to us what is really at the root difference between the two Tana Debe Rav Yishmaels. V'idich mishum da'avi melchu bikirim shnei ksuvim ba'im ke'echad v'chol shnei ksuvim ba'im ke'echad eim alamdim. So now the first Tana Debe Rav Yishmael, who clearly doesn't agree and doesn't think that going in means going in, conquering and settling, is of the opinion that it's because the Torah tells us two times. And two times is not a binyan av. They're no longer the rules, rather the exception. The two times, one is the king, as we already established, and two is the mitzvah bikurim. The mitzvah bikurim also is only going to kick in only after we go in and after we settle, conquer, and after we settle. The Rashi says that the Parsha of Bikurim, which again, we're going to say on Friday night, the Seder, so the Parsha of Bikurim, also Kisavo La'aretz, and there the Torah also goes on to articulate only after you conquer and settle the land. So those are now Melech and Bikurim, two Parshas in the Torah, no longer the rule, rather the exception. V'idach Tzricha, and now the second Tana Debe Rav Yishmael, what's their argument going to be? Like we said just a couple days ago, it's not one and two, it's 1A and 1B. They need each other. Dikas rakman amelach velokas bikurim hava amin bikurim dekam mitan la'alter. If the Torah would have only told me the halacha regarding king and not regarding bikurim, I would have said, look, by bikurim, right, we're benefiting from the fruit, meaning we're eating from the fruit of the land right away. So maybe by Bikurim, I would have to bring Bikurim immediately. Now we could also argue the other way. If I would have said, if the Torah would have only instructed me by Bikurim and not by the king, I would have thought that the king, which is Derech Lichbosh La'altar, generally speaking, the king immediately conquers. So then I would have thought that the mitzvah of the king should apply right away. And the other time to Beit Ravi Shmuel would say, no, it's not 1A and 1B, it's 1 and 2. And I'll tell you why. Because the Torah could have just simply said, Melech v'lo bai bikurim. And the Torah did not have to say bikurim. Va'ana amina, uma melech v'lechvosh l'achir yerusha v'yeshiva, bikurim l'kol shekein. So if the Torah wants us to postpone the mitzvah of melech, of establishing a king, so and that's something which generally is something we wouldn't be postponing, so how much more so should we be postponing the mitzvah of Bikurim? The idach ikas of hachi avamin amida dahave achala. So kamash malan. And then the other time the Beit Rav Shmuel will tell you, no, it's just like chala. Chala, by the mitzvah of chala, we're required to bring chala immediately after we enter into the land of Israel. Rashi points out, everyone's in agreement. The Torah says regarding chala, bevoachem v'tanya, and Rashi here quotes the Sifri, Mishuna biyazim, mikol biyosha b'torah, shenemar behem, kiviecha, kisavo v'kanemar, bevoachem. Doesn't have the word key in front of it. So the moment we enter into the land of Israel, we're chayv in the mitzvah of challah. So then I might have thought that by Bikurim, it should also apply right away. So kamash malan, so therefore the Torah comes to teach us that's not in fact the case. Okay, let's quickly wrap it up. Today we introduce ourselves to the new Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Beis. The Mishnah here details that the basic distinction between agricultural versus non-agricultural law. The Mishnah here tells us that if it's agricultural law, it applies in Eretz Yisrael, not outside. Non-agricultural law applies both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. In the Mishnah, we noted the two exceptions, Arla and Kalayim. Rav Elazar says Chadash. The Gemara questions whether or not Rav Elazar is being Machmer or being Mekel. The Gemara's conclusion, Abai's conclusion, is that he's being Machmer. Arla applies Chadash applies even outside of Eretz Yisrael. We noted the omission of the Mishnah of the mitzvah of Chala. How come the Mishnah didn't mention Chala? Which also applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. Quoted Tosos. Tosos says that it's Chala looks like a Chovas Aguf. And then the Gemara's discussion today. One, the definition of mitzvah tului ba'aretz. Answer, it's agricultural. Two, whether Rabbi Eliezer is coming to be Machmer by Chadash or being Mekel. He's coming to be Machmer. And finally, number three, that's it. And the rest of the daf today was just simply showing us that Rabbi Shmuel, who's arguing with Rabbi Elazar, what's his viewpoint regarding Nesachim? What does the Torah mean when it says Kisavou? Okay, and that's essentially all that goes back to how Abaye understood Rabbi Elazar of our Mishnah.